The following talk was given at the Insight Meditation Center in Redwood City, California. Please visit our website at audiodharma.org.
Good evening. Welcome, welcome. Recently, I heard this expression, failure brings freedom. I thought, what? Is that true? You know, kind of thinking about this, failure brings freedom. And I remembered that there was this time, you know, way back when, in the olden days, when I was a research scientist. And I remember, writing an NIH grant. You know, grants are needed, of course, right, to fund research, kind of that research that I was doing, some cancer research. And, you know, my whole career was kind of dependent on getting this grant, and I didn't get it. I was like, oh, yikes, what am I going to do now? And there was this quiet, right in the back, kind of like a sigh of relief, like, oh, I didn't get it also. And, you know, of course, things unfolded the way they did, and now I'm sitting here being a Dharma teacher. But I was thinking about this, like, what is this connection, this idea that failure brings freedom? And part of it has to do with this idea of what I didn't know back then when I was a research scientist. I'd never even heard of this word Dharma before, or never meditated a day in my life, anything like that. But so I didn't notice then, I wasn't paying attention. And, you know, all my friends and colleagues were doing the exact same thing I was. So there wasn't any, inclination to investigate or be curious about my experience. But now, looking back, I can see that I was so identified. There was like so much clinging to this idea that, okay, you know, as soon as I get this grant, then, you know, the lab can be bigger, I can do these other research, you know, whatever it is going to be. But I was so much of this idea of not only would it allow me to do, but this validation of me as a person, and as well as, you know, all the hours of work that I had done before. And there was so much that I had just invested into this one simple thing that, you know, I did the best that I could writing this grant, but it was out of my control. I didn't decide. Somebody elsewhere was deciding. So this idea that freedom brings failure or allows failure or something like this, in some ways, I think it's pointing to how often we don't notice the desire that we have for things the way that we're pushing or we're identified with it until it doesn't turn out the way that we want, until we don't get what we want. So I would like to propose that part of this practice finds another way to find freedom without waiting for failure to show up, which can be a bummer. Or it can be great. Often we don't know right at the time. So I'd like to talk about this idea of desire. You know, really wanting something. Because there's a way in which sometimes we hear this idea about desire, and we might have heard some of the Buddhist teachings, in particular the Second Noble Truth, that says the cause of suffering is desire. Or some people think it says this. And I remember this was many years ago. I had started meditating, and somebody that I knew kind of casually, I didn't know them so well. And this person, somehow it came up that I was meditating, and she asked me, oh, so you're doing that Buddhist thing. That's so weird, because they think that desire is the cause of all suffering, and that's so clearly wrong. So why are you doing that Buddhist thing? And I was like, what? I don't think it's not all desire. And wait, is it? You know, at that time, I hadn't even thought about it, right? I had just heard this teaching and thought like, oh, okay, desire is the cause of suffering. That's not the case. That's not the case. It's a misunderstanding. It's a way in which we are holding desire. It's not desire. It's clinging. It's the craving. It's our relationship to wanting. It's the wanting itself is not a problem. Of course not. When we're hungry, we want to eat. When we're thirsty, we want to drink. We want to have more freedom. We want to create the conditions in which more and more people in this world can have peace and ease and freedom. We want to feed all the hungry people. We want there to be the end of suffering. These are all good and natural wants, of course. So this whole idea that desire is the cause of suffering is clearly not quite right. It's just a misunderstanding. But I would like to maybe just point to that misunderstanding and take it one step further and say, not only is desire not the cause of suffering, I'd like to say that it can be the path to freedom. It can be a way in which we find more ease and more freedom. And I'll unpack that a little bit tonight. There's a lot that could be said on this topic. It's a really rich topic. There's many things here. So desire isn't the enemy, but we'll see that this idea about clinging, this like tightening around or clinging is one way in which we are, often it's not so clearly articulated in our minds, but there's this way in which we are demanding that reality match our ideas about reality. I want things to be a particular way. I want to get this grant funded so that then I can go on my merry way that I had mapped out for myself. I want a meditation session to just, boom, seek into some perfect stillness and just bliss out until the bell rings. And then continue blissing after the bell rings. just like nonstop bliss. Wouldn't that be great? Yes. I see people nodding. Sure. We'll take that. But, reality doesn't bring this to us. And it would be a mistake if we thought that more and more freedom meant just bliss. I know that sounds like in some ideas, it sounds like, oh, bliss doesn't sound so bad. What actually more and more freedom means is that whatever is arising isn't a problem. It's just the way that it is. And there's this openness and ease and spaciousness and warmth no matter what's arising. So in the early Buddhist teachings, there's this distinction between tanha. Some of you have heard this Pali word. It's often translated as thirst, or we could say it's this craving that binds us, that causes this tightening, this I must have this, or this idea, or the opposite of like, I must get away from that, or this way we might have this sense of things will only be okay if I get this or if I have that or if something else along those lines. So tanha is this way in which we have this kind of contracted, tight feeling, like things have to be a particular way. And that's the only way that will be a source of lasting happiness or sense of ease and well-being. And then the other Pali word is chanda. And this is often more about this wholesome aspiration, this energy toward understanding or this energy towards kindness or this energy towards care. or energy towards loosening and spaciousness, or you know, something like this. So the question isn't about like, how do I get rid of desire? Or desire isn't the enemy. It's like, how do we shift our desire, both to change our relationship, so that if when we recognize that there is this clinging type, like, okay, I want something in particular to happen, can there be a shift more towards this either wanting, which is more wanting, fueled by this aspirations, and then this wanting can lead to some openness, and then this openness can lead to some spaciousness and insight, and these insights lead to more freedom. So this requires that we stay close to desire. We hang out with it. We bring awareness to it, whatever kind of desire we have. There's this way in which when desire arises, we're either really busy getting obsessed about what the object of the desire is, or we're kind of like repressing it or trying to get rid of it and or something like this. Sometimes, and I have seen this where individuals have said, well, I can't be a good Buddhist practitioner or something like this if I have desire, so I'm going to just pretend that it's not there, or some version of this. I'm going to dress it up into some fancy way to make it look different, or something like this. But is there this way that we can have this, maybe this counterintuitive move, this alternative way of being? So instead of thinking like, oh, I shouldn't feel this, we experiment with what happens if I stay with desire, feel it clearly, just recognize it and feel it, and watch what it does. This is quite something, right? This is really different than what we usually are doing, right? We've built this whole society that's around, oh, go chase your desires, right? I've seen billboards. I don't remember the products, of course, but it was all about indulge, you know, or, you know, you deserve this, and it has ice cream cones or something. I don't remember what it was, right? But, you know, we have so much about this. But instead, what if we stay with the desire, like we hang out with it, like, oh, yeah, there's a lot of desire here. Feel it clearly, feel it in the body. Not just a mental thing, but feel in the body, and then watch what it does. Without trying to immediately obey it, trying to satisfy our desire, or without repressing it. Because there's a time, I mean, there's a way in which, you know, I talk about desire, and there's, you know, I was thirsty, so I had a glass of water. This isn't, or a sip of water. This is a obvious, simple desire. But often we have desires to be liked, to be understood, to have a particular person respond in a particular way. Or maybe we want to get this particular object, or this role with job, or a relationship, or we want to get something in particular. And often we aren't noticing those. We only notice the ones that are like, you know, a very distinct object that we can get, the new car, the new phone, the whatever the billboards are selling these days. It's funny though, just, you know, here around Silicon Valley, I don't understand half of the billboards. I'm not a computer scientist. I'm like, oh, that must be important to somebody, but it doesn't make sense to me, which is kind of fun, actually. I kind of appreciate that, you know, like, oh, whatever that is, it's somebody else's problem, not mine. But there's this way that inside the wanting, this desire or whatever it is, there's this secret contract, that secret, maybe even like to ourselves that we don't even know. This idea that, well, if this goes the way that I want, if I get what I want, that person responds the way that I want, then I will finally feel happy. Then I will finally feel safe. Then I will finally feel complete. Then I will finally feel fill in the blank, whatever it is for you. So it's not a mistake that we're out there with a desire, because there's this, we have this like maybe unseen or unrecognized contract that goes with it. So we have this idea, okay, I want to get that grant funded. I wish I could be more creative and think of something. I'm sure if I weren't sitting here with a microphone on, I probably could, but we'll just say this. If we have, we have this idea that we want something, and then it would, you know, make us happy or satisfy, you know, all our desires that we have, the ones that are obvious and not so obvious. And then reality does what reality does. Sometimes things go the way we want them to. Sometimes they don't. The person doesn't respond the way that we hoped they would, or the situation changes in ways that we wish that it hadn't. Or maybe we get exactly what we want, and then we realize, oh, well, 3 days later, now I want this other thing, because it turned out that didn't immediately bolster our sense of self or make us feel happy or complete or something like this. Okay. So when we recognize that our desires aren't getting met, sometimes they do, right? Sometimes they don't. Then we have a fork. Maybe we have like a decision. We have a choice. We can double down and really push harder to try to make it happen. We can start blaming ourselves, blaming other people, those people over there, blaming institutions, blaming anything we can find, right? Well, there's no end to the things that we can blame. Maybe we escalate the ways in which we try to control things, which probably you've noticed doesn't work out so well. We don't get to control nearly as much as we think we do. Or maybe we get lost in fantasy or self-judgment. And there's all these things that we can do when what we're desiring, and it doesn't come to fruition, when it doesn't arrive in the way that we wish that it would. So we could say that's the path of clinging. But there's also the path of the Dharma. And that is to stay close to the experience. Feel the ache. Feel the tightness. Feel the agitation. Allow reality to be what it is, because it is what it is. And it's fascinating how much we want to reality be different, how so much of our inner life is trying, yeah, well, if only this could be different, and I could tweak that and manipulate this, manufacture this other thing. And can we recognize then, if we can like allow reality to be as it is and stopping trying to make it be different, then we can recognize that this desire of this object or situation that we wanted, that it can't actually carry the burden we've put on it. It actually can't be a source of lasting happiness. It actually can't make us complete in the way that we want. We're already complete. We're not missing anything. There's just this way in which desire is trying to tell you, oh, yeah, you got to, you need that in order to be complete. You don't need it. You're already complete. Things won't be lasting sources of happiness, because nothing lasts forever. either that thing or person or relationship or job situation is going to change, or we're going to change. One of them, and both are happening. One of them's going to happen first. So these objects that we're really desiring is not able to provide us with what we're really looking for. With this, what we've kind of like this burden that we've placed on them. So this Dharma, the path of the Dharma is to say, okay, here's a desire. Can I hang out with it? Can I get close to it? Can I walk with it until it shows its limits? That it can't provide everything that we want. That we're thinking that something out there is going to finally satisfy us in all the different ways. So can we make this space for it to reveal itself, reveal its limits? And that revelation of those limits allows a softening of the tightness that we bring to these, to the desire. That softening of the tightening creates the conditions for insights to arise, new understandings to arise. These new understandings create the conditions for freedom, including the understanding that these desires can't satisfy us in the way that we want them to. So the way that desires can actually lead to freedom is, can we, all of them, even the messy ones, even the ones that we're like so identified with and holding on to really tightly, can we hang out with, can we be close to, can we walk next to desire as best we can and allow it to reveal its limits to us? Oh yeah, this isn't going to be a lasting source of happiness because it's changing. Oh yeah, this is just another object that I have to take care of and dust and change the batteries or, you know, whatever it might be. And when we recognize that it reveals its limits, we can't control it. We don't control things in the way that we think we do. I mean, we control a certain amount, right? We think we can turn on the phone and turn off the phone, but we're not controlling the urge at that precise moment to do it in the way that we think we are. So allow it to reveal its limits with this, I'm using the word revelation, but with that revelation, there's a way in which there's this the identification or the really holding on to the desire starts to soften. Oh yeah, this relationship isn't going to make me complete in the way that I want it to. I keep on insisting that this other person make me feel safe all the time, make me feel loved all the time, make me feel okay all the time, and it's not possible. When we recognize the limits, then there's this softening, like, oh, right. Sometimes there's this beat, like, okay, I gotta go find something else to desire, somebody else to desire, another job to have, another something like this. But if we can hang in there in this softening, then there can be this insight, more space. And these insights start to show us, oh, actually, what I'm looking for isn't out there. What I really want isn't out there. what's the lasting sources of happiness aren't out there. And this turns out to be the road to freedom. And something that I like about this approach is it's not a demanding that we only have some desires and not other desires. There's a way in which then, because we start to set up this hierarchy, and with that hierarchy of, like, you know, the good desires and the bad ones, it's like, okay, I'm a good person if I have these, or I'm a bad person if I have those. And that's not helpful. This practice is about to meet the fullness of our lives, like whatever's arising in our life. And so this idea of, can we be with desire? And part of that is to recognize, oh, this is desire. And can we allow it to be there? Can we hang out with it? And can we be with it as feeling it in the body? And also this idea that trust that you don't have to go get whatever it is. You don't have to fix the problem that you don't have it, it being whatever it is that you're desiring. And instead allow it to reveal its limits to you. And where we practice this is in meditation. Because usually in daily life, we're just stumbling into the chasing the desires. We're not even aware that we're doing this. But there's a way with that during a meditation session, we can start to see that, of course, we want calm when we're meditating and we get restlessness. Maybe we would like some ease and we find ourselves falling asleep during meditation. Or maybe we are meditating and we feel like we want to just have some less tension in the body. Instead, we're just realizing, like, oh my gosh, that my knee is killing me or my back hurts. And when is the dang bell going to ring? So we have all this experience in meditation. And so there's the opportunity. Can we just notice, oh yeah, here's what I want, and what I want, this desire is getting thwarted, so I'm also feeling frustration. And often, sometimes there's even a little bit of like aggressiveness to this. This a sense of like, or how can I make this happen? This has to happen, dang it. And so that's more, of course, just this clinging. So every time we recognize wanting is here and we're not like acting it out as best we can, because there is kind of like this compulsive movement that humans have been cultivating forever, and I would say now in the land of cell phones and overnight delivery. You know, it's amazing, right? And I have this, I'll just use this word, electronic assistant. And I sometimes just find myself yelling, what's the weather? And then, you know, this voice comes back and tells me what the temperature is outside, right? It's so funny, right? Just like this immediate, like I can't even like go outside and feel, okay, is it warm or is it cold? Should I wear a jacket or not? You know, instead I just immediately am yelling, what's the weather? It's funny, right? We have so much of this in our lives. It's amazing how much this... So I want to introduce this word I'm often not often using, and that is a different way to be with our experience of desire, and that is, can we behold desire? Can we, you know, recognize it, be with it, but with some, maybe some respect or some care or some warmth? Because grasping or clinging says, oh, how do I get this? Or I got to get more of it. Or how do I keep this? And how do I make reality match my idea of how reality should be? And beholding says, maybe if there's an beholding another, it's more like, what are you actually like? What is this actually like? Can I just let this exist as it is? Can I let you exist as it is? Can I be present for this without immediately feeling like I have to use it or fix it? Can I just be present for it? And I like this idea of beholding, because it's we're in a relationship with the object of desire, but it's a different type of relationship. It's a way that has some warmth and care connected with it. So I would say that this practice is so much is about shifting modes from when we feel like there's clinging, like I need to get what I want, to can we maybe beholding, and recognize that that creates the conditions for maybe some clarity. And this clarity helps create the conditions for freedom. So we're not having to only have particular experiences, just shifting our relationship to them. So it's not that beholding gets rid of desire, it maybe clarifies it and allows the limits of the desire to be known, to be seen. So in this idea how failure brings freedom, I was thinking that there's a way in which failure often creates the conditions in which we can choose, okay, is there going to be more clinging and pushing and trying to make this desire mine? Or is there a way in which can I just be with this experience? Can I behold it and allow some learning to happen? For it's the way that it can't satisfy us in the way that we really want to be known and to be seen. Because chances are, if there wasn't that failure, we would just like, oh, okay, that was satisfied. We might not even notice it. We would just go order the next thing to get delivered, you know. 3 days later, we're getting something else to get delivered, or another person, another situation. And it's amazing, right? There's no end to desire, which is okay, right? I mean, this is what humans do. But there's so many opportunities for us to maybe shift our relationship. Maybe some beholding of the experience of desire, as well as beholding the object of desire. Meeting it with some warmth and some care. Long enough so that it can show us that it's actually not going to satisfy us in the way that we want. And I think I'll end there and open it up for some comments or questions. Thank you.
I so much needed to hear this talk tonight.
I think, I'm not sure, is the microphone on, or can you do it at this? Yep, okay. So
hold it like this.
There you go. Okay. Talking to the top of it.
Yeah, so wonderful talk tonight. Thank you. And I realized I came in with a big desire that I was struggling with tonight. But I also just really got in touch with, I'm a grandmother of a four-year-old. The best thing. And it's so different from being a mother. And I'm learning so much about wanting from my four-year-old. And when my daughter was four and she wanted something, I wanted her to have it, and I would join her in her wanting. When my granddaughter wants something, I just say to her, I can see how much you want that. It's different, and I'm learning so much from it. And this talk really put me in touch with how beautiful I find her, and that wanting doesn't make you ugly. It doesn't make it bad. It's just you want it. And so you took that a little bit further down for me. So that was very nice. Thank you.
You're welcome. You're welcome. Wanting isn't bad. It's what humans do.
Yeah.
Instead, it can be a doorway to freedom. And it's so great, right, for all of us to be able to feel the frustration of like, oh, yeah, I want something and I don't have it. That's so great to increase our capacity to be like, oh, I didn't get it. Thank you. Anybody else have a comment or a question?
I was thinking about wanting for me lately, or maybe for a long time, that like there's an underlying view as to why I'm wanting this. And so my wanting lately that I've noticed is, I'm going in circles, but the underlying view is that I am what I accomplish.
Yeah.
And
it's common.
And so, and I've always known I have these to-do lists and I like crossing things off, and accomplishing isn't bad, but I'm kind of looking at that desire to cross things off the list and the false idea that, yeah, once I cross all these things off the list, then, you know, then what?
Something then good's going to happen.
And then I just add more things.
Like,
to the
right,
list,
it never
course.
Ends.
Yeah. So for me, it's not so much getting things. It's more about this false idea underneath that that I am what I accomplish.
Very nice. Thank you. Thank you for highlighting that. I didn't include that in my little list there. Thank you. I love it. Yep. And it's fantastic that you recognize that and you can start to see, well, is it true that you are what you accomplish? And so when you just notice that, can you just be with, oh, yeah, okay, here's this desire that has this view, and maybe just notice, just hang out with that feeling and see what gets revealed, what gets known with us. Thank you, Elena.
I was going to say that, desire is such a big word.
Mm-hmm.
And so it looks one way when you're younger and very different when you're older, I think.
Nice.
I mean, there's like an urgency to a lot of things when you're younger, and that the urgency changes a lot as you get older. And then I was going to also add that there's also a distinction between, say, wanting a hamburger and wanting, the best for your daughter or something like that. And so they're very, very different kinds of things, I think, in the way that you deal with them in your mind. So I just wanted to raise those distinctions.
Yeah. So I would say that wanting a hamburger, if it's this feeling of like, okay, I need a hamburger and you go through all of this effort to make sure you have one, that would be kind of like the tanha. That would be more like this craving or like really needing something with some tightness around it. Wanting the best for your daughter would be more chanda. It's more this wholesome, helpful desire that's is a force of good in the world, we could say. So I appreciate you making this distinction. They're not all the same. I agree. And I was using this word desire mostly towards the ones that are not so helpful. But all desires we can actually just look at and be with.
Maybe I missed some of those subtleties you were talking about. Sorry.
Yeah, sorry. And those are Pali words. And if you're not familiar with them, then they just kind of go, they just pass over. Back there, can we?
What was the Pali word that you introduced as a pair with sit with craving. There's one that was a movement towards openness or something.
Yes, so I only introduced two Pali words. One is tanha, which is like clinging and craving, which is in the second noble truth, the source of suffering. And then the in contrast was chanda. And that's more, you know, a wholesome desire for awakening, for caring for others, you know, this type of thing. So they both have this kind of like this movement of wanting, but one is associated with suffering and one's not as necessarily associated with suffering.
Movement.
Yeah, I'm going like this with my body, right? I'm leaning forward because it kind of feels like that, like, oh, I got to get that thing, that role, that person. I got to cross that thing off the list, whatever it might be. Sometimes I'm swimming around in these Pali words and I just kind of think, oh, yeah, everybody knows these. But that's just because I've, just because I know them doesn't mean everybody does, I guess.
Last week, I needed some advice about handling a really touchy, high-stakes situation, and I got some advice from a Buddhist abbot, Ajahn Kovilo.
Oh, nice.
And he suggested that in this situation, I should be, without touching the back of my head, conscious of the back of my head, because something about... It's so easy if you want something for the other person to just be moving forward toward it and feels predatory.
Oh, interesting.
And we leave the whole back of ourselves behind. We say, just focus on that and you'll be okay. And he was right.
I love it. Okay. Thank you. Thank you. Okay. That's one way to be present with something in the back of your head. Okay. I hadn't heard that before. Very nice. Okay, so thank you. Thank you for your attention. And I'm wishing you a wonderful rest of the evening and safe travels home. Thank you.